Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Gunanam, the modes of nature, Asammishranam, in their unmixed state, Puman, a person, Jena, by which mode? Yatha, how? Bhavet, he becomes. Tat, that. Me, by me. Purushavarya, best among men. Idam, this. Pudaraya, please try to understand. Shamsidaha, as I speak. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best among men, please listen as I describe to you how the living entity attains a particular nature by association with individual material modes. Purport. The word samishra indicates that which is not mixed with anything else. Lord Krishna now explains that each of the three material modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, acting separately, causes a conditioned soul to manifest a particular type of existence. The living entity is ultimately transcendental to the material modes of nature, being part and parcel of Lord Krishna. But in conditioned life, he manifests material qualities, and this is described in the following verses. So, have they read the introduction? No. So I read the introduction, the summary of chapter 25. The three modes of nature and beyond. To establish the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this chapter describes the various functional manifestations of the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, which arise in the mind. Control of the mind, control of the senses, tolerance and so forth are manifestations of the unmixed mode of goodness. Desire, endeavour, false pride and so on are manifestations of the unmixed mode of passion. And anger, greed and bewilderment are among the functions of the unmixed mode of ignorance. In the admixture of the three modes, we find the concept of I and mine. Behaviour in accordance with this mentality by body, mind and words, adherence to the principles of religiosity, economic development and sense gratification, and the fixed pursuit of one's occupational duty for material interest. A person whose character is in the mode of goodness worships Lord Hari in a spirit of devotion, without regard to profit. On the other hand, one who hankers after the fruits of his worship of the Lord is passionate by nature, and one who desires violence is in the mode of ignorance. These modes of goodness, passion and ignorance are present in the infinitesimal living entity, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to the three modes of material nature. The substance, place and result of activity, along with time, the knowledge underlying action, the activity itself, the performer, his faith, his level of awareness, his spiritual progress and his destination after death, all partake of the three modes and manifest variously in terms of distinctions and hierarchies. But objects related to the Supreme Personality, places connected with him, happiness based on Him, the time occupied in His worship, knowledge related to Him, work offered to Him, the performer of work who acts under His shelter, faith in His devotional service, progress toward the spiritual realm and the destination of the Supreme Lord's personal abode all transcend the modes, the material modes. There are many different destinations and conditions of life for the spirit soul within the cycle of material existence. These are all based on the modes of nature and on fruit of activities, which are governed by the modes. It is only by practicing the yoga of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord that one can conquer the three modes, which arise originally from the mind. After obtaining a human body which has the potential for developing knowledge and realization, a person who is intelligent should renounce association with the three modes of nature and then worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, by increasing the mode of goodness, one can defeat passion and ignorance. Then one can conquer material goodness by evolving his consciousness to the platform of transcendence. At that time, he becomes entirely liberated from the material modes, gives up his subtle body, the material mind, intelligence and false ego, and attains the association of the Personality of Godhead. By the shattering of his subtle covering, the living entity is able to come face to face with the Supreme Lord and thus achieve absolute fulfillment by His grace. I'll just read text one again. Shri Bhagavanda Vacha Gunanam Samishranam Pumangina Itaravivit Tanme Purushab Harihedam Upadaraya Samshitaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O best among men, please listen as I describe to you how the living entity attains a particular nature by association with individual material modes." So here in this verse, in this chapter, Lord Sri Krishna is personally speaking to Uddhava. Here he describes that Uddhava is uses the word Purusha Varyadam, that he is the best among men. So actually this topic of Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the best among men and women. One has to have a little brain substance in order to understand this philosophy. Unfortunately, that is becoming a rare commodity in the age of Kali. The age of Kali is filled with the worst among men and women. People on a daily basis, practically the entire population of every country is intoxicated to a large degree. Actually these days, Mahatma is probably aware of this, that in Australia the greatest problem with opiate based drug addiction does not come from imported heroin or cocaine, what have you, but actually from prescription drugs. It has overtaken. So everyone is aware, of course, of the massive amount of problems that we have with imported heroin or what have you, but the addictive the addictions to opiate based prescribed drugs far excels that as the greatest. So therefore people generally have a conception that low class people people who are out of work, that they're the ones into drugs. But actually, in our middle class and even upper class suburbs, the problem of drug addiction is just as high, if not higher. So, you know, when you go into your average home, people are addicted to very powerful opiate-based drugs, which is destroying their lives. So, and of course, it's destroying their brain substance. Of course, there is alcohol and so many different types of intoxication that people take, you know, just regularly. So these things, of course, destroy a person's brain. If we look at the some of the old rock and roll heroes, and you sort of you look at their brain function. You know, they're just there's barely anything left. You know, they're regarded as great heroes. They're regarded as great heroes that somehow they're still living. That they're able to take so many drugs and they can still stand up with a guitar in their hands. That makes them worshipable. That they lived through that, and that they can still speak a few coherent words. And they are considered great Mahajans. So, people follow this. It's very, they're destroying their brains. And the lifestyle. And, of course, people who eat meat also. People who eat meat... they cannot think on a very elevated platform. So, there are people who, some people kill other humans. If there is some disturbance, then they will kill someone else. And some people have the desire to kill someone else, but the only reason that they don't is for the fear that they will get caught and they don't want to go to prison. Otherwise, they would kill someone. People would kill their wife or their husband or even their children because in order to, they're creating some disturbance. And they would kill them except for the fact that they would get caught, and some even that is not enough a deterrent, they will kill them. So, but they don't perceive, such persons can't perceive the wrong in their actions. You know, they don't have the higher, sensitive way of thinking. And similarly, people who eat meat, they're very, they will very happy to have animals slaughtered, but they can't perceive, on a higher level that there may be something wrong with that. And therefore, people who eat meat, their thinking stops at a certain level. when a person gives up eating meat, you understand that their intelligence has become more refined, and therefore they're able to think of higher subject matters. Higher subject matters, of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest subject matter. So it's understood that just like when people go through different stages of school, we can understand that if someone cannot pass the different tests to show the grade of their intelligence and their abilities, in year two in primary school, when it's understood, then how can they understand, you know, what is to come in, you know, BCE, you know, the last couple of years? That they cannot do it. It's understood. If you cannot understand this, how can you understand the higher level? So if people cannot understand that they should not eat meat, then it's understood, then they have no access to any concept of religion, any concept of God, or any, you know, what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the you know, postgraduate study of spirituality. They have no possibility of entering into these things. And of course, this is the great problem within the world, is that many of the so-called great religious prophets of our time are all meat eaters. All the, you know, the, even the Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. You know, they the Buddhists have the excuse that you know, they follow the path of moderation. So if I'm travelling and someone offers me chicken soup, then I'll not be some fanatic Buddhist. You know, I'll take the path of moderation. I'll just eat the chicken soup. But of course, I actually went to saw the Dalai Lama and kept waiting for some pearls of wisdom that I could take away with me. I went away a little bit disappointed. I thought, I haven't heard anything there that my mother didn't tell me when I was about 5 or 6 years old. You know, be a good boy and you know, try and do your best. And I thought, gee, my mother told me that when I was 5. I was expecting a bit more from the Dalai Lama. And the, you know, they, how many people follow that philosophy? Everyone's following that philosophy. You know, the path of moderation. You know, if you offer me some beer, I'll drink it. You know, I'll be a good bloke. I'll be, take the path of moderation. And if I'm associating with people who are at a party and they're taking cocaine, and they offer me that, yes, it's a path of moderation. There's some cocaine. You know, it's a very dangerous philosophy, actually. If we just, you know, that something comes our way and we just, in the name of religion, that we accept it and give it some, you know, term and path of moderation. Everyone knows that actually the Buddhists are supposed to be, the, you know, ahimsa is the very pillar of the movement. It was founded on non-violence by Lord Buddha himself. They also have the, you know, they say some Buddhists come from the high country and some Buddhists come from the low country. So if the Buddhists who come from the high country in the mountains, it's not possible to grow so many vegetables and what have you, and therefore many of those people who follow Buddhism, they eat meat because they just don't have access to the, you know, fruit and vegetables as they do in the low country. But then, you know, you question that, you know, how many Buddhists are living in the mountains of Nepal at the moment? You know, most of them are living about 5 minutes away from, you know, a supermarket. Right? So how can they say, well, you know, yeah, you know, my great-grandfather lived in the highlands, but I'm still eating meat because he lived up in the hills and he couldn't get any, you know, fruit and veggies, and I live 5 minutes from a supermarket. You know, I'm using the same excuse, and my children use the same excuse. It doesn't matter how easy it is to get vegetables. The fact is, I want to eat meat. So they call it the path of you know, moderation and this and that and the other. But the fact is, the undeniable fact is that they actually want to eat meat. And they would justify that in the name of religion. And they cannot see anything wrong with it. If they cannot see anything wrong with it, how can they understand even the philosophy of Buddhism? Right? The whole philosophy of Buddhism, of course, is based upon non-violence, and therefore they cannot understand the basic principles of it. So what to speak of some of the more, you know, elevated thoughts. Now, people are very, very easily fooled these days. Very easily fooled. Just like, you know, we have movements like Scientology. The Scientologists have a huge following. You know, some of the supposed leaders of our society, you know, very, very so-called big men around the world, you know, very, very, you know, fully dedicated to Scientology. I was watching a documentary the other day. Is that they have a process? Their knowledge, of course, this knowledge here of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is meant to be spoken by those who are brahminically, you know, qualified. And Vaishnavas above that, and this knowledge, we see that Srila Prabhupada came to the West and he spoke knowledge with no concept of any personal reward. He gave knowledge for the fact that it is the duty of those with knowledge to distribute that knowledge. There's no question of reward. In the Vedic system, teachers were not paid to teach. They gave knowledge, and there was never a salary. A teacher should never receive a salary. As soon as a teacher receives a salary for teaching, then they will teach what they're paid to teach. And knowledge then becomes corrupted. A teacher must teach knowledge simply because it is knowledge and because it is their duty. And they should not teach for a salary. And in the Vedic culture, the students, they would collect alms or, you know, bring something from home and give that to the Brahmin of charity, whatever they could afford. That means if you were the poorest of poor persons, if you could bring an apple, you know, say bring an apple for the teacher, that's where it comes from. Then, you know, the teacher would give you the same knowledge as you know, whatever you're qualified to understand. He would give you that full knowledge for that one apple, and someone else may be able to bring, you know, 10 rupees or what have you like that. And he, so it's not that, you know, like the university these days, that if you can, you know, pay so many thousands of dollars, then we will teach you some knowledge. And if you don't have that money, even if you have almost that money, but you don't have that money, you will not get that knowledge. Even if you're qualified to have it, if you're qualified to get that knowledge and you don't have the money, and the one who has the money is not even qualified to learn that subject, that person will still get the knowledge because he has the money. So, that's the system we have. But Srimad Bhagavatam, knowledge and religious principles are supposed to be just given freely. And also, you know, the Brahmanas, they not only teach knowledge, but they help people to practice religious principles, purification rites throughout the whole course of their life, so that they become purified and able to dovetail all their activities in the service of the Lord at that. So whenever a Brahmana performs a religious ceremony on behalf, you know, with a certain people, family members, or opening a temple, or anything, the Brahmanas will always explain, this is the nature of the ceremony we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and this is how we're doing it, like this. And if there are any questions at all that come throughout the course of that ceremony, the priest or the Brahmana must explain, so that the people who are, have come along to perform that ceremony, they are fully satisfied that they understand what they're doing, and therefore they can actually get the result. But of course these days the Brahminical community in India or even in other religious organisations, so-called Brahminical community, they keep the one, they actually don't even understand what they're doing, number one, so they're actually not qualified to teach. And if some know something, they're hesitant to tell the general congregation, you know, that they're doing the ceremonies for the the understanding behind what they're doing. In that way it becomes a monopoly that only they can, they have a monopoly and a certain power and prestige, artificial. Just like Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya, he was he went to one guru and he wanted to make some spiritual progress, and the guru said, I will give you this mantra, but you cannot, this mantra is capable of chanting, is when you chant it, it is capable of liberating even very fallen people. But I'll give you this mantra, but you cannot tell it to anyone else. So he gave him the mantra. It is on the more Narayana Namaha. I think it's so. Ramanujacharya, after receiving that mantra, he went to the marketplace and started calling out this mantra. Om, come here, gather around, everyone. By chanting this mantra, anyone from any walk of life can be liberated from all the reactions of their activities and gradually develop their love for the Supreme Lord. And so he was telling everyone, Om Namo, Om Narayana Namaha, like this. And everyone was coming, and then the guru came and he was very, very angry. I told you, you couldn't tell this mantra to others. And Ramanujacharya said that, you told me that it could, liberate them from their miserable condition, their suffering. And so let me go to hell, but let them all chant the mantra and be liberated like this. So actually the guru understood that, although I am supposed to be the guru and you're supposed to be the disciple, actually your consciousness is more elevated than mine. And then he was actually very pleased with Ramanujacharya. But we see, such as in Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, TM, that they have the secret mantra that you have to pay for. Right? And which is completely against the entire Vedic process. The people, especially in the West, they can be very gullible, just so easily tricked, is they have no knowledge of anything. So someone comes and a complete abomination of against the Vedic process, I'm going to peddle this Vedic mantra. Nowhere in the history of the whole culture of the East, these mantras up for sale, but the West don't know that, and therefore they can come. Yes, I will sell you this mantra like this, and so they But you know, and they tell them, but you cannot tell anyone. Of course, the reason is because the mantras are all bogus mantras. They give some, you know, mantra, and so many people have got the same mantra. Right? They're all supposed to have an individual mantra, but you know, in the West, of course, no one can keep any vows. So, you know, I promise, you know, I won't tell anyone. You know, like that. So they can't keep any vows. So you know, oh, what's your mantra? Mine's this one, and you know, what's? So then they find out, of course, well, you've got the same mantra as me. So much cheating, because you know that's the problem. The only reason they get them that you don't tell this mantra is because they know that as soon as everyone reveals the mantra and the nature of the mantra and what it is, everything will be revealed. You know what a cheating guru one has. Of course, the Gayatri mantra is chanted softly by Brahmanas. That is a slightly different. Of course, there's no fee, you know, to accept the Brahma Gayatri. In India, you can see, you know, sometimes you can even buy a clock and they have the Brahma Gayatri, you know, around the outside. You know, it's just, Brahma Gayatri is very easily available, but the reason it's chanted softly only by the Brahmanas is because unless one is situated in the mode of goodness and follows other certain rules or regulations, and the Gayatri mantra is given by a guru, it will not actually have an effect. And in essence, those who chant the Brahma Gayatri without following any of the rules and regulations can commit offences to the Gayatri, to Mother Gayatri, the personified deity of the Gayatri mantra. Sometimes the jagyas, people, you know, some of the people who are not Brahmanas, neither by birth nor qualification, they want me to chant the Brahma Gayatri, you know, as they're throwing grains into the fire. And I tell them, you know, because that's something that, again, priests have got them to do in India, which is not bona fide, you know. Because the priests don't know how to perform the ceremony and what the people should be saying, they just give them anything and people will say, oh, yes, the priest, you know, has told us to chant the Gayatri Mantra. So they will say to me, yes, we chant the Gayatri Mantra. And I say, no, you cannot do that. And then they think, but our priest told us to do it. My mother has done this. Her mother has done this. And then, you know, I've got to convince, the hardest thing is telling, you know, someone from the Indian congregation that their mother may be wrong. You know, that's a very hard thing to do, you know. I mean, in the West, you know, you say your mother's wrong. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, you tell someone from the Indian community your mother's wrong, you know, it's like, and your grandmother as well, it's, you know, you're treading on really thin ice. You know, your priest, your mother, the grandmother, they're all wrong. There are mantras that you can chant, there are mantras that Brahmanas chant, and this. So, everything has to be explained. It should be explained. But certainly mantras, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is given freely to everyone. The beauty of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is that as Lord Chaitanya says, Nam Namakari Vahuda Niti Sarvasakti Stachapita Nemita Smalanina Kala Itadrasi Tavakri Pavada Namapi Tadadaiva Nidrisam Mihachini Nanuraga. That in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, there are no rules or regulations. Anyone can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You don't have to be, you know, there's no rule that you must be a Brahmana. There's no rule that you have to be born in India or, you know, in a certain part of India. There's no rule that you have to be a certain age. There's no money involved. There's no fees. There's no pre-qualification. Anyone can take the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and chant the holy names of the Lord. That's not the case with the Brahma Gayatri and certain mantras like that. Certain mantras, you know, they're chanted by Brahmanas in the worship of the deity, and of course one needs to be trained up in cleanliness and control of the mind and senses in order to worship the deities, and then on that platform one can worship the deities and utilize certain mantras in the worship of the deities, such as the Brahma Gayatri. But the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that can be chanted by anyone, anytime, any place, anywhere. You can even chant while you're eating. You know, for instance, the Gayatri Mantra, you know, you take a bath three times, there's chanted, the Gayatri Mantra is chanted at the three junctures of the day: sunrise, noon, sunset. And one will take a bath, put on fresh cloth, sit facing a certain direction, fix one's mind, and chant the Gayatri Mantra, meditate on that Gayatri Mantra. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you can chant any time, any place, any condition. Therefore we say, Om Pavitra Pavitrava Sarvavasti Gutopiva Yasmeret Kundari Kaksham Sabhya Vintara Suchi. That you can chant the holy name. As soon as one chants the holy name, they immediately become purified. Whatever their condition, you know, pure or impure, immediately they chant the holy name, immediately they become purified. Therefore, it is for everyone. Of course, if one wants to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and do it in the most pleasing way to the Lord, one may learn some of the methods of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, such as chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, not taking intoxication. Then at least when one's chanting, one can, you know, have some brain substance to be able to understand that I'm chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and that is helping me think of Krishna. And one can have some actual conception of Krishna because there's some brain substance left. So not taking intoxication, not eating meat. Again, you know, these things, if we do these things, it's very hard to understand, you know, why should I chant Hare Krishna? You know, and people cannot understand that there is a God. People cannot understand that God is completely transcendental. He has nothing to do with the material world. That by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you are chanting the names of the Supreme Lord, who governs all of material creation and who exists beyond material creation. So by not taking intoxication, not eating meat, not having illicit sex — illicit sex also is another way of destroying the brain substance — that for men, you know, when they conserve the semen, it transforms. Of course, it takes so many gallons of blood, as they say, to create the semen within the man. We create a few drops, and it takes so much of that, that transforms into just a few particles of oja, which travels up the spine and nourishes the brain. And those who engage in, you know, in sex life just constantly, they have no ability, you know, to focus. You see people in this day and age cannot focus their attention 1 or 2 minutes finish. You know, like here, we're sitting, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The devotees just, they can fix their mind for hours and hours and hours. You know, 24 hours a day, devotees are, they're in samadhi. Their concentration is fixed on serving the Lord, you know. Always meditating, it's a fixed concentration, unbroken, you know, never breaks. For those, you know, who engage in all these nonsense activities, they cannot fix their mind for 2 minutes. And therefore, unfortunately, they're easily exploited. So people cater to that, even from childhood. You know, these big businesses, they know that the parents cannot fix their mind. They want constant distraction. The children want constant distraction. And therefore they sell it. And their video games and their television and their, you know, everything they are, you know, giving to children. So they know that they cannot fix their mind. So we can make a lot of money from this. That they will accept any nonsense, you know, some cutter lights flashing and this and that and the other, and you know, a little bit of noises. You go into the where they have the poker machines. Right? And here are the adults. Because they, you know, they're just zoned out. There's the music, you know, that sort of. You know, I don't know if you've heard of it, just, you know, sort of jingles away like this, and the cutter lights flashing, you know, and, you know, it's just because they're catering to the fact that, you know, these people cannot sustain a thought in their head for more than a few minutes. They cannot string a few consecutive thoughts together, and therefore, you can simply flash a few coloured lights, a little bit of music, and they'll just sit there like a zombie all day, putting their money in the machine. You know, there goes the rent. You know, not even thinking. You know, there's the rent, there's the kids' food money. You know, there's my bus money home, I'll have to walk, you know. It's a fact. And you think, oh, maybe there's one or two people. No. Thousands. You know, do you know anyone who's not doing it? You know, it's unusual if someone is not, you know, engaged in either, they're either addicted to gambling, intoxication, you know, illicit sex, meeting, you know, who is not destroying their brains, destroying their life with these different things? So, although there's no rules and regulations in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if one wants to derive the actual benefit, one should follow those principles. And in that way, one can actually meditate and come to, you know, become the best of men, the best of women, to understand the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, you know, without taking the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and without following, you know, these different principles, people will be fooled. Therefore we have, as I was describing, the Scientology movement, that you pay. So there was one very famous movie star, and he has spent so many million, I think it cost him $3 million. What you do is, as you pay, you get, they release a little knowledge, you know? And as you pay more, you go up a rung, like that, according to how much you can pay. After many, many years, when they've really, you know, drawn everything they can from your bank account, they give the ultimate knowledge. You know, the ultimate knowledge is in the Scientology. The ultimate knowledge is that 75 million years ago, some spaceman came to the planet Earth and populated the Earth. And that the some of the humans are, you know, their descendants. And, you know, the whole idea is to somehow tap into these alien superpowers, and by doing that, you can become very wealthy. You can become very famous. you can, you know, continue material existence forever like this, and actually think you're happy and successful. So the whole, you know, the concept of the Vedas is to snap you out of the illusion, because we're conditioned. Anyone who thinks they're happy is in complete illusion in the material world. If we're taking material happiness as happiness, we're in complete illusion. We become conditioned, just like when the soul leaves the body after a lifetime of intoxication, eating meat, illicit sex, and gambling. They've earned themselves the body of a hog or a dog or some, you know, animal form, because the benefit of having the human form of life, which is you can actually think about elevated topics, they've never taken any interest in that. The interest is in, you know, how much sex, how much food, like this. So therefore, you know, get a body of a pig. You can eat. If you want to eat, eat as much rubbish as you like. You know, you want to have sex, you know, just like sometimes you see these big billboards, you know, how to have sex longer. Yeah, easy. Just take birth as a pigeon. So then, but in order, see, coming from the human platform, if you're then suddenly thrown into the body of a pig, you wouldn't be able to actually survive even as a pig. So you get conditioned. So in between taking the next birth, as a result of all the sinful activities, one is taken to the abode of Yamaraj, and there's so many different types of punishments. And those punishments actually condition one to a certain level of suffering, so that by the time you take birth as a pig, you're thinking, yes, this is normal. You know, this is happiness. You know, the pigs actually they enjoy eating stool because they've been conditioned. Because, you know, we couldn't eat stool, but if you were conditioned over a long, long period of time, you may be able to eat stool, and then you'd pick up some stool and you'd think, oh, this is not bad compared to that one. That was a little tart, that one, but this one's not bad. But you can become conditioned to it. No? So, in human form of life, you know, we sometimes, we may look at someone and we think, oh, you know, how can these people live in such filth and disgusting circumstances? They're thinking their happiness. But from the demigods, they're looking at us and they're thinking, you know, even these humans who think that they're, you know, at the top of the rung, how can they live like that, you know? So, and from Vaikuntha, the perspective of the spiritual world, they're thinking, these people in material existence, you know, how can they live with this birth and death and old age and disease? What sort of, how can they take that as happiness? Like that? But we become conditioned like this. So you can join different movements like the Scientologists, and of course they will increase that conditioning. That yes, not only we can teach you, we can make you more conditioned, so that you're more foolishly thinking that, yes, now I am happy and successful in the material world, and this is my place of happiness. And, the Vedic knowledge is completely different. Vedic knowledge, very sobering, very sobering. It's not the intoxication that you get from all these nonsense so-called gurus and, you know, spiritualists, who just increase the fever of stupidity unlimitedly. You know, Vedic knowledge is very sobering. You know, you are about to die. You know, you're in a material body. All sorts of painful experiences can be experienced within a second. And in this material body, What's worse is you're about to take another material body and you don't even know what it is. And that's a very sobering thought. You know, of all the different... So, you know, Vedic knowledge is very, very sobering. It's not flattering people's egos, and it's just, you know, cutting through all the nonsense. You know, be careful, tread carefully, because the material life is a dangerous place, place of misery. You know, take the human form of life seriously. Therefore, Krishna is saying to Uddhava, he's saying, please listen, just listen, just stop and listen, just and. It says, Upadharana, please try to understand as I speak. So this knowledge which is given freely in the Srimad Bhagavatam, freely from the Hare Krishna movement, there is no price to pay, anyone can have it. And our only request is just please listen. For your own, that's all we want. You know, if you have listened, we are fully paid. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
I have a question. As you said, really training is very, very important. And childhood is the most important time to learn everything. For example, my mother, when I was only 5 or 6, she used to repeat one shloka from the Bhagavad Gita. If you don't become Krishna conscious, you have to go to another womb. It can be a human womb or any womb. She was telling me straight. If you don't become Krishna conscious, you have to take birth in another womb. Animal or
womb. And just see now, you know. Just see the effect. So this is what mothers are supposed to be doing. So you listen. So that's, you know, because all you had to do and all a child can do is just listen. See? All you did was listen. And because you listened, then it's guaranteed perfection. Any other questions? Sorry, all goes to the top.